From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
So on today's Writer's Block, we have a special guest, Jessica Brody. I was very excited when I was looking at your work because I thought it would be perfect for my daughters to read so many of your books. I thought, oh my gosh, perfect summer reading material for my tween and my almost tween. Yeah. So thank you for coming on, first of all. I know there was a lot of traffic. You drove in from Vancouver.
I'm good.
I'm glad to be here. That's the way of this area. And we'll talk about your many, 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 many novels that you have. I was very impressed with your list
Thank you.
A moment. And also your newest one that's kind of, or not your newest one, but one of your newer ones about how to write a novel with has an unusual title. We'll talk about that. But I want to get your background because it sounds like you always knew you wanted to be a writer, but in college you kind of went a different path.
Yeah, I always loved to write ever since I was seven, but I never really thought of it as a real career. Mm-hmm. I always thought, you know, oh, someone writes books, but they probably don't get paid for it because that's too fun, right? You can't get paid for something that's that fun. And so I think somewhere along the way, I just got this idea that I needed like a real job with a 401k and dental insurance.
Right, because that's what your parents tell you,
yeah,
right?
That's what
you have to do.
Yeah, I remember my grandmother being like, you know, like you have to, you know, make all the money. And I said, well, what's the best job for that? And she said, businesswoman. And so I, I was probably like 5 years old, so impressionable. And I ended up going to school, majoring in economics, getting a job at MGM Studios as a financial analyst. So I became a businesswoman. And I actually did really enjoy working at MGM and doing that financial analysis stuff. But there was like this part of me that was kind of just missing.
Yeah, like you had like an itch or
an
something,
itch,
right?
An itch, yeah. And I was writing on the side and, you know, I was looking more and more into this whole world of writers. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that it actually was a real job and people would pay you for it if you were good at it.
Right.
And so I actually got laid off from MGM in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I immediately got another job offer from another studio and I turned it down.
Wow.
And I said, no, I think this is the sign that I needed. It's time to try this writing thing. And I set out to finish my first novel, ended up selling it about a year and a half later. And since then I've sold like 17 novels to major publishers.
That's crazy. And that's not the story that everyone has.
No, I mean, there's some like a lot of rejection in there, but that I skip over, but there's, it wasn't as smooth as I make it sound in 30 seconds, but.
Yeah, but that was a huge leap. And so had you been, because I read about you and that you wrote your first book when you were seven or something called it with the puppy and the.
The puppy and the kitty.
The puppy and the kitty.
My riveting story.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was very drama action packed. But had you been just kind of like dabbling in it the whole time, writing stuff on the side?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I went in and out based on what was happening in my life. But I always, kept a diary. I always wrote stories. Like I have this box full of just stories that I was writing as I grew up. And I was in creative writing classes in high school. Mm-hmm. But again, like it was never, since I was seven when I thought it was possible between from then to the time I, left my job at MGM, it was like never quite a real option.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it just was and I went for it and Yeah, here I am.
Yeah, and so what was the first novel? Was it aimed at a teen audience?
It wasn't. I wrote for adults first.
Okay.
It was called The Fidelity Files, about a private investigator who investigates cheating spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think at the time I thought, well, I'm an adult, so I should write about adults. Like, why would I write about anybody else? And I barely knew that the young adult genre existed. Like, obviously I'd read those books as a teen, but I didn't really know that was a thing. And then I came up with this idea that I thought was an adult novel, and I was going to call it The Karma Club, and it was going to be about three 30-year-old women who decide to take karma into their own hands and get revenge on everyone who's been mean to them, and they form this karma club. And I pitched it to my agent, and she was like, 30-year-old women, like, getting revenge on people, that sounds
really karma.
Sad. Yeah, she basically was like, that's really sad. I was like, oh. And then
You're
I
like, but I have been planning.
Exactly. I was like, well, I won't mention I based it on my own friends. But she had a point, and I was like, well, what if they're not 30? What if they're like 17? And she goes, oh, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how I fell into it. And I was like, okay, I'll write a teen novel. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I had
Did you know any teens at the time?
No.
Or, okay.
No, I had no idea. I had not read a teen book since I was a teen.
Right.
So I went out and I just bought a bunch of teen books and I just started reading them. And I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be like really boring research because what do I have in common with teenagers?
Right. How old were you at this point?
30.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and I remember just like devouring these books going, okay, I like these better than the adult books. What's that?
Right.
Like, what's that about? So I wrote the first 50 pages and I sent it to my agent and she said, you should finish this. And I did. And then we sold it in a 2-book deal. And then I've just been writing for teens ever since because I just love it. I felt like I tapped into a side of myself that I was like the most organic writing I'd ever done. And I think it was just because I was still pretending to be an adult.
Right.
I still am.
And you thought you should write about adult things.
Yeah, and I've always felt like a fraud writing for adults. Like, why now? But I feel like writing for teens, I can write with a certain sense of authority because it's like I've lived through it.
Yes.
And I can look back at it and sort of develop it from there. Yeah, and then from there, I decided to go a little younger, and I started writing books for tweens. So I have a couple books for 10 to 13-year-olds. And then I got asked to write these Descendants novels for Disney, which is a little bit younger.
Crazy. I mean, those are so huge. I mean, just having had kids that were recently that age.
Yeah.
Because parents, you buy them because they're so, you know, quick.
Yeah.
And I never thought about there's someone who's actually writing this behind it because it's just so Disney.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and you have to play within the Disney rules. Like you know, it's very regimented and, you know, the plots are all the plots have to be, approved by multiple people. But it's fun. Like when Disney asked me to write a series of Descendants books, so I wrote 5 for them called The School of Secrets. And it's all the sort of side characters that don't have like a big storyline in the movies. They get like their own storyline.
Okay, so not the Dev Cameron main character.
No, the biggest one we did was the Carlos books, and I'm blanking on the actor's name. Who plays Carlos? He's the son of Cruella De Vil.
Okay, I've been forced to watch the movies
about
50 million
Cameron
times.
Bryce.
Yes,
Bryce.
That sounds right.
It's one of the other.
One of the other.
Sorry, Descendants. So we did write his story, but most of them were like it was Captain Hook's daughter. It was we did Dr. Facilier's daughter. We did so a couple of just sort of minor characters, but then they got their own story within the world.
Oh.
And it was really fun because I got to play within this world that I always loved. And
yes,
yeah.
And maybe they'll make that into a cartoon one day and follow the stories, right?
Yeah, and it was because like some, you know, you get to put little details in that are not in the original and you're like, I did that.
Yeah.
That's my idea.
Well, and you did one of the Lego Disney princess.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of keep going younger because that's 5 to 7. So then they asked me, so my editor at Disney asked if I would work on these Disney princess Lego books.
Which is like so specific.
So fun. It's basically the Lego versions of the princesses.
Right.
And they all live in this castle together where there's this, I think she's 7-year-old girl or 8-year-old girl, I can't remember her age, who is playing with the princesses, but they don't know that they're toys. So they live in this like totally magical world with this castle that keeps changing.
Yeah.
Magically.
Yeah.
And then there's this mysterious messenger that keeps showing up with mysterious messages.
And then you're given those parameters and told, okay, write something. It's almost like a class assignment or something, right?
It's so fun. And I actually do love, so those are called work for hires. It's when a publisher hires you to work on something specific for either a brand that already exists or an idea that the publisher has. And I've done a few. And they're fun because, you know, there's a lot of the pressure is off because you don't have to come up with everything.
Right.
And if you run into problems, you just bounce it back at the editor and go, here's the problem, and they work on it with you versus when it's your own ideas, you're responsible for all of it.
Which is
stressful.
With the Disney, I think it would just be, and they all lived happily ever after. You know, you got to make sure you get back to that place.
Yeah.
Is writing for, I've always thought people who write for teens and tweens, that they have that challenge of, you know, they probably want to make it edgy enough, but is it hard to kind of keep it in some certain guidelines where you can't really go so far to, you know, one way or the other?
It's an interesting question that is being talked about a lot today in the teen market. And there's writers that will say, I mean, I think it depends on the writer and I think it depends on the publisher because there's writers that say, no, there's no limits these days. Like you can do whatever you want. And it's up to the readers and the parents and the teachers and the librarians to decide, you know, where it fits in their life. And, you know, for me specifically, my books tend to be very clean. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep everything, I don't know, I think it's just what I'm comfortable writing. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep everything to the point where, you know, if I had a 14-year-old girl, I wouldn't be, like, horrified that she was reading it.
Right.
And that's not to say, like, there's certain things I would be horrified, but the cleaner you make it, the easier it is to get into some libraries.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done books that have some language and have some drinking and have some, like, older content, but the majority of my books tend to be, they get rated 12 and up. So.
Okay, yeah, because you have to be somewhat, you know, what would the word be, genuine? Because you know that teens know about some of this stuff. So it's not like,
I think it depends on the character.
You
know, like the book I did write, I wrote a book called Boys of Summer, which was a teenage book about three teen boys who have vacationed on the same island together every summer. And we were sort of calling it like Dawson's Creek-ish meets Jenny Han. And it's told from their three points of view. And I'm like, they're 18-year-old boys. They're not going to say, like, oh, gosh darn it. You know?
Oh, golly gee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
And they're going to have 18-year-old boy issues. And so that book is a little bit older
more
in the
racy,
content.
Yeah.
But I also keep in mind that I do have younger readers who come up from The Descendants and come up from the tween books I write. And, you know, I want them to be able to segue into my teen books seamlessly without, you know, too much shock.
Like, oh my gosh.
Well, yeah.
It's gotten dark. Now, one of your latest, the geography, or one of your newer ones, right? You actually based that on a road trip to Oregon?
Well, I just moved to Oregon.
Okay.
For the Oregon area from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
The last book I published living in Colorado was called The Chaos of Standing Still, and it's about two teens who get stuck in the Denver airport during a massive snowstorm. And so I always called it like my goodbye letter to Denver, because it was the last book I wrote there. And this is my hello letter to the Pacific Northwest. So I wanted to write a road trip book, and I thought, what better place to put a road trip than on the Oregon coast? And I'm moving there. So my husband and I set off. We took a road trip from San Francisco to Seattle, the same route that they take. And I just, you know, soaked it in and plotted the book along the way.
Yeah.
And then this is what came out of it.
So. I love it. Yeah. And so you have written all these novels, but you also have kind of made a mark in the how-to books. So I want you to explain that, because we have a new one out called Save the Cat. Writes a novel.
Yeah.
So when I saw this title, I was like, what? Is there a cat involved? And I had to like it's kind of a how to write a novel.
Right.
So this started before this book came out, right? The Save the Cat?
Yes. The Save the Cat brand. Okay. So the reason I'm published today, and we can go back to my 30-second success story, the reason that ended in success is because I found a book that was published back in 2005, around the same time I quit my job, called Save the Cat, and it was a screenwriting book.
Okay.
Save the Cat, the last book on screenwriting you'll ever need. And a friend gave it to me because I was struggling to write this novel. And he said, oh, well, it's just about story. I feel like it would work with anything, like any story, a book, a movie, a short story, a play. And so I read it, and I was like, it was basically just breaks down structure of story into these really easy to follow 15, they call beats, or like plot points. So it's like a roadmap. It's a story roadmap. And I remember being like, oh my God, this is so helpful. This is the secrets to the universe. I just stumbled upon it. Now I can write my book. And I ended up rewriting the book I was working on, which had been rejected like tons of times. I rewrote it based on these 15 beats.
Yeah.
And I sold it.
Wow.
And then I've just basically been using the same method for every book. And so I like to say, you know, like, I've sold 18 novels. They're published in 23 countries. And I'm like, well, you know, I could take some credit, but I actually really accredit it to just this foundational work of structure that I did. And so it was years later that I contacted, so the original writer of Save the Cat, Blake Snyder, was a screenwriter who passed away. And I contacted the estate that sort of takes care of keeps the name alive. And I asked if I could write this book. And we worked together on this book called Save the Cat Writes a Novel, which is the Save the Cat applied to novels.
Yes.
And it came out last year.
And have you been getting, it sounds like you've been getting really good feedback from people about just how helpful it has been.
It's amazing. It's probably the most rewarding feedback I've ever gotten. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always nice when someone likes your writing or when someone enjoys the story or, or said, I cried at the end. Like, that's always nice. But when you, get that email or tweet or whatever that says, like, I couldn't figure out how to write this book and now I can, or I just got an agent because of this book, or like, I stopped writing for 2 years because I couldn't get out of this slump and then I read your book and now I'm writing again. Like, that's just a different kind of magic.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
I mean, you're helping all these now up and coming writers.
It's, yeah, and I'm like waiting, I'm sort of waiting, now that the book's been out for about 6 months, I'm sort of waiting for the cycle to start where I'm hoping that there's, in with maybe in another 6 months to a year, there'll be books coming out where people will say, like, I used this book to write it. I'm like, oh, gosh, that's so weird.
Professor Brody, yeah.
I love it. It's like my two hats that I wear. I also teach online. I teach writing classes online. I have a catalog of classes. And I just, I kind of like bouncing back and forth. Like, I learn something when I write the books, and then I turn around and I just teach people what I just learned.
Yeah, I love that.
It's like a cycle.
Yeah, well, and you do a lot of school visits, it sounds like, too.
Yes.
Is that more to talk about whatever novels they might have in their library of yours?
The school visits, I normally visit middle schools or high schools, and yeah, they usually bring me in sort of as like an inspirational thing, like, you know, writing is a real job.
Right.
People write for a living. The books you read on the shelf have people faces behind them. And I talk to the kids about my books, about my path of becoming a writer, you know, the struggles of writing and things like that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, yeah, they'll ask me to come in and do a, like a writing class.
Yeah.
But I do like visiting the schools because it reminds me of who I'm writing for.
Right, yeah, and just, I'm sure, do you get a lot of interest from kids when you go and visit them?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the best ones are when you go in and there's a kid who, you know, ends up buying a book or checking your book out from the library afterwards, and the teacher comes up and says, that kid never reads.
Oh, really?
And so it's that's like the best, you know, when you get those. 'Cause I just think when you go in there and you sort of talk about what books are to you and how you got involved and you make a lot of jokes. And I mean, I just go in there and just make fun of myself. I show them really embarrassing pictures from high school and middle school and like my, of me and my first boyfriend and stuff like that. And they just, you know, they eat it up. And I think they just, when they see there's a real face behind the stories, like even me, when I love to read, but when I see an author talk about their book, I'm just like, oh, I need that book.
Right.
Just you get that little extra push. And so it's really fun to see kids, it's really rewarding to see kids like picking up a book because you've just made them interested in it.
Connected with them,
yeah.
No, I loved, looking at your website, I loved all the little random facts about you. And my favorite was that you won't say a pocketbook or panties because I hate panties.
I hate those words.
What? And so you won't find those in your
pocketbook's
books.
Pocketbook's like just not as bad.
Yeah, pocketbook isn't as bad. I won't say moist either.
I don't mind that one, actually.
Oh my God,
I'm weird.
I can't say it.
I know people don't like that word. I don't mind that one. The thing about pocketbook, I'm just like,
What is that?
Word? It's not a. It doesn't go in your pocket. It's not a book.
No.
Where does this word come
no,
from?
It's just some old timey thing. Yeah.
I know, but it's sort of a. I think it's an East Coast West Coast thing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because I grew up on the West Coast, and like I had some friends whose parents were from the East Coast, and they would say, you know, oh, the money's in my pocketbook. And I was like, what?
They put their money in a book? Yeah. No, I thought that was great, and just kind of made you even more, you know, relatable. But so, are you working on any? It seems like every author I interview is working on the next thing. You always have these stories in your head.
Yeah. I'm working on the sequel. So I just released a book in March. That's my first co-written project. I co-wrote it with my best friend named Joanne Rendell. And the book is called Sky Without Stars. It's a sci-fi retelling of Victor Hugo's Les Miserables. So we call it Les Mis in Space. And it was so fun to write and it was epically hard. And now we're writing the sequel, which is epically harder. And we are basically on maybe like the fifth rewrite now. It's just been a lot of revision. Actually, we're not rewriting, we're revising it.
Right.
We're done rewriting it. Yeah, we're editing it. We're making it better. So it took us a long time to get us to the point where we could just revise it. We've been rewriting it for a while. So it's called Between Burning Worlds, and it will be out in March.
Okay. Well, Jessica Brody, thank you so much for, again, dealing with the traffic from Vancouver in here. And we really appreciate it and wish you all the luck on everything to come.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.